Maybe you're one of the unlucky people who's had a bout or two or many with lower back pain. Misery loves company. Millions of people suffer from lower back pain all the time. The causes can be many, but the remedies can be few. It's not like there's an instant cure, but the treatments medicine does offer could be a problem too. A team of researchers that includes a professor at OHSU, Oregon Health and Science University, suggests that the common methods of treatment might not contain the most common sense. Dr. Roger Cho is the director of the Pacific Northwest Evidence-Based Research Center at OHSU, one of many authors of a series of papers published in Lancet. And I'm sorry, is it Cho or Chu?
It's Chow.
Oh, Chow. Okay, third choice.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I'm intrigued by the name of the research center, the Pacific Northwest Evidence-Based Research Center. What is the primary focus there?
So what our center does is we do scientific reviews. So when an agency or professional organization wants to make a decision about, what kind of health care to do, whether to use a certain drug or a procedure or what types of tests to do, they will ask us to look at all of the published literature, sort through the studies that are higher quality from those that are not as high quality, and then to kind of put it all together, often doing statistical analyses to determine which treatments and tests work the best.
And is it true that you're one of 13 evidence-based research centers across the country?
Yeah, there's 13 that are in the United States and Canada. These are all designated by the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, which is a Department of the Health. It's part of the Department of Health and Human Services.
So I have to believe, Dr. Chow, that the low back pain is as old as humans themselves. This is certainly an obvious area for attention.
Yeah, it's one of the most common things that people, it's ubiquitous. Almost everybody is going to have low back pain at some point in their life, and it's one of the most common reasons why people go to see the doctor. It trails only the common cold in terms of symptomatic reasons why people go to the doctor.
And like the common cold, it has no cure. What are some of the things that bedevil science in this area with low back pain? Is it just there are many causes?
Yeah, it's often difficult to identify a specific cause of low back pain. The back is a complex structure. There are many components to it. And pain itself is complicated. Pain is a subjective phenomenon. You can't, do an x-ray or do a lab test and say this is where somebody's pain is coming from most of the time. And especially so in the back. We can see degenerated discs or arthritis in the back, and you can see a horrible x-ray and somebody can have no pain at all, and you can have a completely normal x-ray and somebody can have a lot of pain. So this makes it very complicated. The other thing that makes management of pain complicated in general is that it isn't just affected by the biological and anatomic processes. There's a lot of effects in terms of how people cope and psychosocial factors and how those impact people's pain.
Psychosocial factors like what?
So people who have depression, who have fear of pain or activity, or fear of activity causing worsening of their pain. People who have, say, for example, workman's comp claims tend to have more prolonged pain. People who have disordered sleep or who have post-traumatic stress disorder also tend to have worse pain. So all of these things are quite separate from what's going on in the back itself. But actually, most studies show that they are more important influences on the duration and severity of pain than, say, x-ray findings.
So it sounds like a very individual thing. I mean, you could have 100 people, it sounds like, with the exact same things showing up on x-rays, but very, very different interpretations of it through their own bodies and lives.
Yeah, exactly. So, people, it is very individualized in how people, respond to the pain and cope with and manage the pain can be quite different. And it does require clinicians to understand, that we're treating individual patients, not treating an x-ray or treating, a lab finding.
So you have a bunch of options here when you're looking at back pain and treatments for specifically what to research. How did you narrow the focus with your team?
Yeah, so, you know, the Lancet series of articles that I was involved with, you know, they were really looking at back pain from a global perspective and trying to see, you know, understand the burden of low back pain, which is, you know, I think it's underappreciated. People think of back pain as, I guess, not, you know, often it's not a big deal compared to something like cancer or heart attacks. And not to say that those conditions aren't very serious, but if you actually look at causes of disability, people not being able to work and function in their daily lives, back pain is the number one cause worldwide. And in countries that don't have a safety net, like places like in Africa or other or developing parts of the world, if you can't work, you know that you know you're going to be in a lot of trouble. So it's a really important issue worldwide. The series of articles was trying to bring attention to that, and then also trying to look at, you know, how can we provide care, not just in the United States but in other places, and kind of learning some of the lessons from what's happened here. So we looked at a variety of drug treatments as well as non-drug treatments, so things like exercise, massage, manipulation, acupuncture, etc., and also surgeries and other types of procedures. So it was a pretty broad overview of the literature.
Which makes it sound like medical science throws a lot at back pain, but with what level of effectiveness generally?
Yes, and that's been one of the problems, is that, you know, many of the treatments, in particular, many of the more, shall we say, aggressive treatments, so things like opioid medications, surgeries. We've been doing more and more of these things in the United States over the last 10 to 20 years, yet we actually have more back pain now than we did 15 or 20 years ago. So this suggests that some of these really expensive, invasive therapies aren't particularly effective for most patients. And what we've actually found is that many of the therapies that are relatively low-tech, so they involve exercise, learning some coping strategies and skills, things like massage, manipulation, acupuncture, yoga, mindfulness-based stress reduction. All of these types of techniques are actually quite as effective and often as effective as a lot of these more expensive invasive procedures.
Okay, back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking about low back pain. It is suffered by roughly half a billion people at any given time in the world, and we're still kind of mystified about where it comes from and how to treat it. So a lot of treatment options are used, and with limited levels of effectiveness, as you just heard Dr. Roger Chow say from the Pacific Northwest Evidence-Based Research Center at OHSU in Portland, we actually have more back pain now in America. You can join the conversation on the Exchange and maybe share a story. I've got one of my own to talk about with lower back pain, but let's hear yours. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So we were talking, just as we got to the break, about the fact that a lot of the less techie, less drug-based treatments are the ones that seem to have the greatest level of effectiveness, which honestly, Dr. Chow, sound more like lifestyle than medicine.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's taken a more kind of holistic kind of view of things that we can do for patients. But it's also, this is not unique for low back pain. I mean, we're seeing this with other types of pain conditions as well. And what we're learning is that the body has a lot of capacity to adapt and to function, you know, despite having chronic pain, and that we can use these techniques like exercise therapy, like cognitive behavioral therapy, some of the psychological types of approaches, and actually have quite, you know, good effects, and certainly safer than, you know, a lot of the other things that are sometimes done to patients.
We can assume, I think, that that like many things that that produce pain in people, that there's been a lot of opioid drug prescriptions in this area.
Yeah, low back pain is the number one reason why people are given opioids. So it has been a major factor in this issue, and there was actually recently just a study done at the VA that was published in the journal JAMA just a few weeks ago that showed that using opioids was no better than a non-opioid medication strategy.
I noticed that. So naproxen or ibuprofen were considered just as effective?
They worked, yeah, both of the strategies were just the same, and if anything, actually the opioid-based strategy was not quite as effective. So a lot of the perceptions we have about how some of these treatments and medications work, when you test them rigorously, it doesn't pan out that way, which is why this type of research is so important.
So I do want to talk about some of your other research. You were part of a team that issued opioid prescribing guidelines in 2016. Were they very different from guidelines that existed prior to that?
Yeah, so I was part of the group that developed the CDC prescribing guideline, and I would say that was an extension of work that we had done previously. I had led a guideline back in 2009 for the American Pain Society, one of the first national U.S. guidelines. When we were first starting to realize that there were some issues with opioids and how they were being used. And I think the CDC guideline had the advantage of a lot more data having been published in the interim in the 7 years since 2009. We understand a lot more about the risks of opioids. And also, as an example of that study we just talked about from the VA, also learning more about kind of the limited effectiveness. And so the CDC guideline really emphasizes using non-opioids for most types of chronic pain. We also suggest a number of things that clinicians can do to try to make opioids safer. The number of deaths related to prescription opioids every year in this country is about 16,000, which is pretty unprecedented in terms of medications.
That is that's a bunch of deaths. And is that just the opioids? Does it include the fentanyls and the things like that as well?
Yeah, fentanyl is an opioid, and I was just talking about prescription opioids.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at all opioids,
okay. So
including illicit opioids, so not prescribed by a doctor, the numbers are closer to 40,000.
Okay.
And there's actually been a recent spike in heroin-related deaths, and the fentanyl has been a major issue because it's so potent, and it's very cheap to make, and so it's getting into a lot of the illicit drug supplies.
I remember looking at a picture of a fentanyl dosage compared to a heroin dosage, and it's just amazing how much less of it takes to be fatal.
Yes.
So the overall approach then, I mean, not to get stuck on opioids, but the overall approach then of medical science, particularly in the United States toward treating back pain is what then? I mean, are we treating symptoms alone?
I think that's one of the things we're trying to get away from is that treating you don't want to treat pain alone. What we want to do is help people get their lives back, right? So a lot of people assume that patients want their pain to be zero, which is it's true to some degree. But if you really talk to patients, a lot of times what they will say is something like, "I want my life back," and as a clinician, that's very helpful for me because then I can start to engage with them and say, what does that mean to get your life back? And a lot of times that'll mean being able to, participate in their kids' activities, going back to work, whatever work they're kind of doing. And then we can kind of design a plan to help them to get that. And honestly, doing things like medications and doing the surgeries, are often not particularly helpful for helping people to get to that point. And what is often much more effective are these therapies, what I call active therapies, therapies that focus on getting people moving, understanding how to cope with their pain, that even when they have pain, that doesn't mean they're causing damage to their back, that they can still function and do things. And learning some strategies for dealing with those flares, so relaxation strategies, breathing techniques, those kinds of things. It doesn't mean we can't use medications. It doesn't mean that we can't use surgeries in patients who, aren't doing well with these other strategies, but those really should be reserved for those types of cases. And most patients can be much more effectively treated by getting them active and functional.
Dr. Roger Chow, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the director of the Pacific Northwest Evidence-Based Research Center at OHSU, Oregon Health and Science University. He is part of a team that published a series of papers in The Lancet regarding low back pain and issues with the way we treat low back pain. You can join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Michael in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi, how are you doing?
Doing well. Yourself?
I'm doing well, actually. I had a T-bone in my T-bird when I was 19,
mm-hmm.
and I ended up getting a chiropractor, fortunately. A couple of years of chiropractic, and I was a martial artist, so I was stretching out continually, breathing exercises, and the doctor gave me these organic anti-spasmal back pills, and they do adjustments, and sometimes they use that ultrasound to get the muscles to relax because they had quite a bit of muscle damage and some compressed vertebrae. You still there?
Yeah, we're still here. Mm-hmm.
Well, the thing is, it took me 2 years before I could sleep for 2 hours. It hurt too much to lay there. But after years of staying at work, his suggestion was keep stretching and keep working.
Mm-hmm.
And I could sleep for like 10 hours now if it went. And I'm, you know, it's pretty strong back. The muscles are all holding me together.
Okay. All right. Thanks for sharing the story on that, Michael, which is, I've heard this before from my own experience with backs as well, that physical therapy and strengthening the muscles around the areas that are weak and have a big part. Is that something you're discovering as well, Dr. Chow?
Yeah. Again, exercise therapy is probably one of the mainstays of treatment. And, you know, some of the exercises, the exercise techniques can vary, but what seems to be pretty effective for low back pain are what we call core stabilization exercises. So that really do focus on those muscles that help to stabilize those back.
Now, one of the sentences here from the Lancet report on March 21st, recommendations include use of a biopsychosocial framework to guide management with initial non-pharmacological treatment. We talked about the lifestyle things, the people you're around, the biopsychosocial framework. The non-pharmacological, though, is going to be tough for people who've got severe pain, you know. And so in a lot of people, does that acute phase of really bad pain pass ultimately and get sort of a dull ache after that?
Yeah, so acute low back pain, so that's what we call acute if it's within the first 4 weeks. People actually have a very good prognosis, meaning that the vast majority, 80 or 85% of people who have an episode of low back pain will get better just with time in the first few weeks. And so for those patients, you know, we are just trying to help them with the pain and to be able to, you know, continue to function with their life. And that could mean some analgesic medications to help with some pain relief. It could mean a little bit of, you know, massage or chiropractic or whatever. But those people are going to do generally quite well. What's much more difficult is chronic pain. So once the back pain has been present for about 3 months, the natural history changes quite a bit. And those people tend not to get better, and they often will have back pain for years. And that is much more challenging to treat, and this is where we start to emphasize much more the biopsychosocial approach and using these non-pharmacological treatments. And the non-pharmacological treatments, you know, there's a perception that they're not as effective, but as I mentioned before, if you actually look at the studies, in many of the studies, exercise therapy is as effective as you know, any medication we have out there. And if you compare surgery to something like multidisciplinary rehab, which involves exercise plus psychological therapies, again, there's no difference in the randomized trials. And so, you know, there really is data to support these types of approaches.
But, you know, for somebody who really wants something now, and I have to believe that clinicians certainly want to help as well. I mean, on both ends of that transaction, you're looking for, can you give me a pill so I can feel better right now? So you're talking about transitioning away from that from both ends of that transaction. Is it hard, do you think, on the clinical end?
Yeah, I mean, again, we're not saying don't use pills at all. I think we're trying to say that shouldn't be the only or primary focus. that you can use the medications to, you know, give a little bit of symptom relief. But again, especially in people with chronic low back pain, you know, the goal is to get them, you know, functional and give them their life back. And giving somebody a pill in most cases just doesn't do that. And so you can give medications that provide some symptom relief. We need to be very careful with opioids these days, of course. But in conjunction with that, we want to get people to be using these types of active therapies that we know are quite effective. And, you know, they have benefits beyond the back. If you're able to start an exercise program and maintain it, you're going to experience, you know, other benefits, not just with your back pain.
Let's take another call from Vince in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dr. Roger Chow.
Yes, I have a question for you. I had my back fused probably about 8 years ago,
uh-huh.
9 years ago. And at the time before the surgery, I took lots of different medications, Soma, Percocet, a lot of different medications, 3 and 4 times a day. After the surgery, I had to continue taking those pills for probably almost a year because of the pain I had.
Mm-hmm.
But little by little, it went away. I weaned myself off of the opioids, except I do take a Norco a couple times a day. What are your thoughts about that? And if I don't have it, it seems like I can't even function during the day as far as, you know, doing any kind of work, yard work, that type of thing.
All right. Thanks. All right. Let's find out. Thanks for that.
Yeah, that's a good question, and you know, it's the amounts of the pain pill that you're taking. Norco is an opioid; it's a hydrocodone, a combination pill. The amounts that you're taking sound quite reasonable. Those are not high doses, and you're using them to help you function, to be able to do things. And so, as a clinician, I would be very comfortable with that. Where I would be concerned is if we had to use higher and higher doses, if you were increasing the dose on your own without, you know, telling me, if you were getting pain pills from different doctors, if you were taking the pain pills because you were depressed, those kinds of things, which people do. But it doesn't sound like any of those things are happening with you. And like I said, if the medication is helping you to function, as a clinician, I would have no issue with that.
All right. A lot to learn still about lower back pain, but some interesting research into where it comes from and how we treat it, and some finding of issues with the treatment methods out there now. Series of papers published in The Lancet, one of the more recent ones on March 21st. Dr. Roger Chow is the director of the Pacific Northwest Evidence-Based Research Center at Oregon Health and Science University, OHSU, part of that team. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks for having me.